The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, and Kevin Negandhi with you. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, review. Feedback is always welcome, especially if you have something negative to say about David Pollock and what he talks about when it comes to Alabama. We love that. So much to cover from Ohio State's dominance. Questions about Jim Harbaugh at Michigan after we were feeling good last week, to Alabama rolling and Mac Jones moving to the top of the Heisman odds, according to Vegas, to the number one team in the land. That is Clemson surviving this past weekend against BC and now taking the road trip to South Bend with Trevor Lawrence sitting out. More on that. And by the way, welcome back, Pac-12. And we'll get to that conference later on here in the podcast. But I want to start with something. You guys have both experienced on the road with game day this season, and we talked briefly about it early on. No crowds, no buzz. And Herbie, I noticed Saturday night, no whiteout. It's hard not to notice while watching that game on ABC. It felt really eerie. What was the experience like in Happy Valley when it comes to calling a game without 100,000 people, and you know what that environment was like in the past?
I thought Fowler brought a really good point in the open that we've all kind of gotten accustomed to watching sporting events without fans. But he thought because of the whiteout, this might be the most drastic what could have been and what is reality moment of the entire sports calendar up to this point. And I felt that. I don't know how it felt, you know, sitting in your studio watching or people at home watching. But, you know, I've tried to just flip the switch and get over the fact all these games we watched that there's no crowd and just kind of lock into the game. But that was really weird. I mean, you know, that's of all the games you ever do, that's the game you look most forward to with that crowd. And to not have that, it was surreal. David even brought it up on the show, and I think it was pretty obvious it was going to impact Penn State, you know, especially their defense and their chances of slowing down Justin Fields. And not only that, the first play of the game, they go jet sweep and pick up, I don't know, whatever it was, 60 yards and three plays. They're in the end zone at 7-0 before you could settle into your sofa and get ready to watch the game. And so it was different. It was very, very bizarre. And I think of all the games we'll watch this year, we'll see anything quite like that from what we, you know, have come to expect.
And I think, like we've talked about defense this year, I think, you know, defense is about emotion. Defense is about energy. Like, defense is about effort way more than offense. And I think, honestly, I think a lot of this defensive stuff is you're used to being in with a bunch of crowds and you're used to like having that momentum on your side and them cheering you on and then getting you high. And then all of a sudden you ain't got none of that. And, you know, there is no ability to impact the other offense and to make them feel uncomfortable. There is no getting people on edge because guess what? You know, there's no crowd. There's no adversity. Like, a lot of times once it starts snowballing and you got young guys and you got things cooking, it's a wrap, dude. You see people all the time shut her down. And so I think it does make a big difference. And Saturday night, you know, Kirk did a good job on one of the plays with Justin Fields. You know, he claps his hands and he's like, check, 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 90, 93. Like, and I'm like, wait a minute, you can't do that. This is the student section. Like, you can't say that. Like, it literally, you know, the snap counts, you got to realize, are different. They're hard counts. I bet you there's more offsides penalties on defense than there's been in any year in college football. Like, because you can continually do a hard count. You can continually clap your hands and say hut. And you saw it over and over in college football. So it's definitely strange, man. It's the adjustment period is going to come for a lot of teams. The Pac-12 just jumping in. The Big Ten continuing to adjust as the season goes on as well.
I know we're going to watch every game and experience it differently because certain games you have a somewhat of a crowd of 20,000 in the SEC. We saw, you know, Dan Mullen on Saturday night trying to come out and rile the crowd up.
Darth Vader.
You know, yeah. that fight and that brief brawl at halftime, and that was just a surreal scene. But another experience too on Saturday afternoon at Clemson. You know, when you watch Boston College, you know, take that lead, and now granted you're on the road, but as a team that's the underdog and you're on the road and you could take a lead the way they did it by 18 points and you don't have a huge crowd, that works in your favor as well, right? If you're Boston College in that situation, but then the talent wins out. DJ Uiagalelei was fantastic. I thought the situation never felt too big for him. Again, now he gets his first road start this coming weekend at Notre Dame. They're 7-point favorites. What, Herbie, what did you think of the game plan of Clemson for the true freshman early on, and then how it changed in the second half because the offense looked completely different in my mind in the second half to what it was early on in that first half?
Well, I think it was a combination of things, right? I think it was Boston College kind of coming into the game with a mentality of we have nothing to lose. You know, the call there with Tess's son where he came in, and that was by the way, a awesome, really cool moment. But it was also an illustration of the mindset of Jeff Hafley, like, yeah, what the heck? I mean, let's go for it on fourth down. Let's take some chances. What do we have to lose? Kind of mentality. And they built that big lead at 28-10. And then things become different emotionally for both teams. Clemson goes from, you know, we're kind of in second gear and we're kind of finding our way with a young quarterback, and our defense has a lot of new faces. And I personally, watching the game, thought it had as much to do with good BC and good BC mentality and an aggressive approach as it was, boy, Clemson's flat-footed. Boy, Clemson they're not focused. They're not playing hard. I think it was just BC was prepared and playing their butts off. And they've been doing that a lot this year. And then I think, as we know, it's a different animal when you're up 28-10. I don't want to say you go into survive mode, but Clemson got a lot more aggressive because they had to. And I think that allowed, you just said it so perfectly, I've been practicing Uiagalelei. I think it allowed him to just kind of forget about, you know, sometimes as a quarterback, when you're young, you think too much. And when you go a little bit more tempo, the reason you see offenses go tempo with young quarterbacks is it takes the thinking out, and it's almost goes back into practice mode, and it just becomes quick. And when you go quick, you just allow your ability to take over as opposed to overthinking. And I think if there was anything, there was a little bit of overthinking early. And then they got 28-10, David, and it was like, oh, we're in a hole. Pop, up, 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 up. And I think he really was able to shine. I don't think he's the least of their problems coming out of this game, going to South Bend. I think he's on the road, but it's not a traditional road game. I think it's more about what the heck do you do without Tyler Davis in the interior? What do you do without James Skalski, who's the defensive coordinator in the front seven? What do you do without Mike Jones, who's a guy that's been around for 3 or 4 years, even though he hadn't started, he knows the defense inside and out. I think that's a much bigger challenge and issue as they get ready for Notre Dame than what's going to happen with the young quarterback.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, how different is this game? And we know football is a game of momentums and runs. How different is this game if Clemson ties it up 14-14 and doesn't give up a fumble on the goal line that gets returned 98 yards?
14 points. Yeah.
So I think that would have been a different game. But if you look at BC, by the way, it kind of blew my mind a little bit just from watching the game. But they had 275 total yards of offense. Like, I felt like Clemson's defense played worse than that, to be honest, just because I'm not used to them. But, you know, I'm not used to their DBs giving up contested catches. I mean, a lot of – by the way – players making plays for Boston College. Like you said, guys on the outside, that Zay Flowers, you know, making a big catch. That Sebastian kid made that. No, he was the one who made the fumble. But the Lewis kid goes up after the Joe Tess, you know, fake thing, and goes up and makes a great contested catch. And, you know, BC made plays. They had opportunities. But, yeah, I'm not worried about DJ. I'm not worried about the Clemson offense. I am excited to watch Notre Dame, though. I'm excited to watch them play against a good team and maybe get tested and see if Ian Book is as a quarterback, and to see what this offense is on the explosive scale, if they can create explosive. Because I can tell you right now, Clemson ain't going to let you pound the football. And no way in heck, bro. Not a chance. Not a chance. Like, Brent Venables is going to bring pressure, and he's going to blitz, and he's going to stop the run, and he's going to play man coverage. He's going to say, beat my guys on the outside. Let's see what you got. And so – I think obviously a huge test, a huge challenge. I'd be interested, and I'm sure Kevin already knows this because he's a gambling junkie, but is there a line already, Kevin? Like,
yeah.
What's the spread in this game?
If you were paying attention to this podcast earlier, I did say the line. Right now it's at 7 points. You know,
well,
so
I paid attention to the curve talk. I didn't.
Yeah, exactly. That's talk. Clearly evident. It's evident throughout our relationship. But it's they're 7-point favorites, and that just shows you that the comfort I think that they have with the offense and how Vegas views Uiagalelei in this offense. I want to ask you guys though the timing of Dabo saying that Trevor Lawrence would miss the game right after the game, and not keep anybody guessing. And not playing, you know, his cards here. And listen, he doesn't have to. But we've seen gamesmanship in the past from coaches. What did you guys think of Dabo right after the game just saying, let's get this out of the way and let's send the message to our entire team. This is going to be DJ. We're going to be focused on Notre Dame. We do not need to answer any other questions about Trevor Lawrence's status the rest of the week, because that would have been the storyline all week long. Herbie, your thoughts first?
To me, Dabo doesn't. He's not a guy that really pulls any punches. I don't think he's a, hey, you know, here's a good idea. Why don't we? I think it was just. It was probably from the beginning, even though we were all speculating. Let's see. Wednesday was a test. That's day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, theoretically, day 10 would be Friday, and if his symptoms started earlier, theoretically it could be even earlier. So maybe there's a chance he plays for Notre Dame. And maybe behind closed doors, it was just like, hey, Trevor's health is first and foremost, even though it's 10 days. He would not have practiced. And, you know, this I'm saying this would maybe even before the BC game that they were talking like this with Trevor and his family. Hey, we're out this week. We're out next week. Because for him to come out that quickly, I don't think there was an agenda. I think it was just him sharing news. And it was just, and also, then there's no speculation on Sunday. There's no speculation on Monday and Tuesday. It's just... you kind of fill everybody in, everybody gets it, you move on, and it's kind of a dead story. So I think he was just sharing what was probably already predetermined with the family, with Trevor.
It's exhausting, Kevin, when you answer questions from the media over and over and over again. Players get worn out.
Kevin, is that what you're going to say?
I mean, you know, the media types.
He went media types.
But when you have to answer questions, I'm just telling you as a player, man, there's nothing worse than getting the same question ad nauseum. It wears you out. You get sick and tired of it. It's annoying. So I think Dabo taking that off the plate of the players of every day going, is Trevor going to play? Is Trevor going to play? What's Trevor doing today? How's his hair? Does he smell good? Like, I mean, literally, it would have been nauseating to the coverage. So I think it was a great job of Dabo taking a distraction and removing it. Now I don't have to worry about it. And guess what? Clear statement from my team, guys. We got what we got. Sunshine ain't coming, okay? Number one pick, he's not going to be here next week. So y'all better do everything you can to go beat Notre Dame and South Bend. There are no ifs, ands, or buts.
How do you think this theory plays out here? Also, let's just play a scenario out that the committee would look potentially at Lawrence as an injury, because this is kind of how you have to look at it, that it's COVID-19. If you're out, that's an injury. You can't play. And that Clemson is in a spot where they can afford to lose Saturday. I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying that where they can afford to lose Saturday and still make the playoff, because if they run the rest of the way, the schedule, they'll face Notre Dame again in the ACC championship. And the way we look at this race right now, the playoff, it feels like it's three teams and then a whole bunch of everything else that we're going to just figure out, play out. What are your thoughts on this concept that we could see this rematch here with Clemson and Notre Dame again in the ACC championship, and we could potentially see both these teams make the playoff?
I think it's the foregone conclusion at this. I mean, Miami's still out there.
Nope.
You don't. I mean, I don't. I'm just trying to keep them in the mix here, man. You almost look at this game Saturday, and I don't want to take away from its importance, but the real game will be, you know, when everybody's healthy and everybody's playing, and assuming nobody's, you know, on the COVID list, and we get a chance to see them in the ACC championship. Because whatever happens, whether Clemson loses or wins, they're gonna see Notre Dame, and whoever wins that game in the ACC championship ultimately is going to move on to the playoffs. So, you know, you're eliminating Miami completely. You don't think they still have an outside shot there, guys?
No shot. No shot.
North Carolina's hopes went out the door against Virginia in the second half as well.
I would love to sell that, Kirk. I would love to say I believe in Miami, but it's It's Notre Dame and Clemson.
Who's got Miami's got? They're probably going to be favored, pretty heavily favored, every game they play. They go to Virginia Tech next week, but
I could see them losing. But here's my question. My question would be on the other side. Where is Notre Dame going to lose?
I mean, I don't know the tiebreaker. You guys have to explain to me the tiebreaker. If they both were to lose one conference game, if Notre Dame were to lose to Clemson, and Miami had the loss to Clemson as well, how does that play out if they both end up with the same overall record and the same conference record?
Okay, that's highest percentage of wins during the regular season.
They don't play head to head.
I don't think Miami can run the table. I mean, I think Miami's going to lose to either Virginia Tech or North Carolina. I mean, I think, and I wouldn't be surprised if they lost both of those games. And I think I think it'll take care of itself. But Kevin's doing the important research stuff.
Head to head competition versus the team with the best overall win percentage and proceeding through the conference. Multiple ties within the conference will be broken from first to last using the league's tiebreaker policies. Overall win percentage versus all common conference opponents.
I think it'll come down to common opponents because they're going to have the same record, same conference record, same overall record. If under that scenario, if they both their only losses both to Clemson. By the way, Notre Dame goes to Boston College the week after they play Clemson. I would be careful with that game.
Yeah, yes, no, you're right on that. You're right, cause especially after the big game and the physical toll. It'll take on the body.
And don't forget the quarterback at BC, a transfer from Notre Dame, Dracovic, and he's been great. I mean, there were some throws he made in the second half late where you're like, oh, what are you doing? But I thought he played a really good game early on. He's fearless.
If you put a normal BC quarterback back in the day in this offense, instead of being 4-3, BC would be they would be a 2-win team. They'd be 2-5. I mean, literally, he makes that kind of and it's not his arm to me. It's his ability to shake people off. His Big Ben ability, just people come after him to go tackle him, and he's just like, yeah, you're going to have to sit down real quick. I mean, he's just so big and strong and then makes plays. And listen, I think he's got underrated weapons too. He's got some nice players out wide too, but he's taking advantage of those players more so than any quarterback has for BC since Matty Ice, for goodness sake.
It's time now for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection is going to really matter this weekend. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And Herbie, we're going to do this for the final time where we do not have all five of the Power Five conferences playing because the Pac-12's next week. So give me the teams you think that should be in the conversation that are currently playing right now.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the Pac-12 this weekend. And you're right, every week we're going to be taking a look at the All-State Playoff Predictor. And just a reminder, the All-State Playoff Predictor projects the top teams' chances of making the college football playoff. I'll be pointing out where protection can really change the game. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And for me, I just, this season, it's not about survive in advance. For me, there's a little bit, I said at the beginning of this, there'd be volatility with my rankings. It's not a knee-jerk reaction to what happened. It's with Clemson and Trevor Lawrence, a lot of people are making a big deal about it. To me, it was really more about their defense and not having James Skalski and Tyler Davis and Mike Jones and Boston College doing things against that defense. And if you go back the week before that, they didn't necessarily have their A game against Syracuse until the fourth quarter. And so because of that, I personally moved Clemson down. I moved Alabama up to one, Ohio State at two. I still have Georgia, even with their one loss, rounding out my top four. After that, I've got Notre Dame just barely ahead of BYU. You know, I think BYU is a team that's untested because of who they played, but they've been dominant up to this point. So I think they should be rewarded, not so much for who they played, but how they have played. And, you know, for Notre Dame, it's an opportunity, right? You know, the rankings can flip around pretty quickly if they take care of business at home this weekend against Clemson. So it's really irrelevant at this point. Everything's in front of them. But for now, I have them at five behind Georgia.
You know, and that Friday night, I mean, we've got a great slate of games this coming weekend, but that this Friday night, BYU taking on Boise State. And Boise State's been hit hard with COVID-19, but that we will see a good test here for Zach Wilson and his crew. And if you're wondering right now how the playoff predictor looks, Alabama's in first, 88% to make the playoff, followed by Ohio State at 85%, Clemson at 72%, Wisconsin there just under 40%, Georgia at 26%, followed by Notre Dame at 25%. But then you got Oregon at 18%. We'll see them against Stanford on ABC Saturday night, and then USC as they open up their schedule against Arizona State. More Pac-12 conversation coming your way as the podcast continues. Before we move on to some of the other conversations, let's focus real quick here on Alabama and Ohio State. And Herbie, you saw with your own eyes personally, you saw them there this past weekend. Justin Fields, his stuff is ridiculous, especially when you look at the breakdown. When I think it's 36 touchdowns and one INT against Big Ten opponents since 2019. When you watch him in person from a year ago to this year, where is he getting better? What has impressed you the most? And it feels like I'm watching the best team in the country when I watch Ohio State right now.
Yeah, and the thing is, they still, if you ask them, they have a long way to go to kind of reach their potential. You know, there are moments where you watch them and you go, holy cow, look at all these weapons. Then there's other moments where you go, you know, they obviously want to become more consistent. It's just their second game. Justin Fields has improved. I think the area the most is his ability to work through his progressions, like any quarterback that gains more experience. Last year, he had a tendency to, if he was in rhythm with one hitch and the ball out, his accuracy and rhythm was off the charts. If you took primary away, there was a tendency, because he's been able to rely on his athletic ability, there are a lot of times he would come off primary and want to get out. And I think that was a big emphasis with he and Ryan Day. How great is it for Justin Fields to have Ryan Day even throughout the quarantine with film study and just one-on-one interaction? That he said he grew more in that time and got to know Ryan Day on a personal level than any time in his entire career. And, you know, so he made that a positive instead of a negative, spending that one-on-one time. Even when the Big Ten got shut down, instead of going home or working with his quote-unquote personal quarterback coach, he worked with Ryan Day, and a brilliant move. And so what I see is his feet have calmed down. He's working through his progressions. He's still, like all athletic quarterbacks, he's still trying to figure out when to hold the ball too long and when to either throw it away or get out of there. So I think that's still kind of a little bit of a balancing act that all guys try to figure out. But, man, I just think it's his maturity and his approach and his poise and his confidence that right now in the system, not just his own ability, but the system. And, you know, if they keep running the ball the way they did against Penn State, where they're able to control the line of scrimmage, and they don't have J.K. Dobbins, but Master Teague getting behind his pads and getting physical at the line of scrimmage, and Olave and Garrett Wilson and the tight ends and these young freshmen, that pretty dynamic offense. It's got real potential to be scary.
I mean, what do we want to say? He's got an awful 7 incompletions and seven touchdowns. I mean, the guy sucks. He's just got a lot of work to do. It's fun to watch. And by the way, it's not – Ryan Day is also one of the best at what he does. If I'm a defensive guy like I am and I just watch offenses and they get in a rhythm and you're like, all right, I kind of got it figured out. Ryan Day just keeps the foot on the gas the whole game. It's really annoying. Like it's coming from a defense perspective. It just makes you. He's always got the foot on the gas. It's always aggressiveness, and you know it's gotten to the point where literally I'm watching the game and I'm like, all right, I'm not even playing run anymore. Like I'm not playing all your little boots and your layers concepts and all your crap. I don't care. Like run the football. Go ahead, Master Teague. Have at it, bro. Trey Sermon. Have at it. You can have all the yards you want. I'm literally going to play the boot game. I'm going to play the pass. I'm going to play the play action consistently and try to take that away. Cause you know, he's just, Justin Fields is processing things exceptionally well. His ability to scramble and just, it's unbelievable. It's a dynamic combination. Whoever's with Ryan Day is going to be successful, but you got a guy that doesn't make mistakes and a guy that has that kind of athletic ability That kind of accuracy, it's not fair for defenses.
You know, one of my favorite moments Saturday was on game day, you know, Herbie doubling down and asking the hard questions to Pollock to clarify his statement that the season is done for Alabama and they cannot win it all. And then we give the podcast shout out. And then right then and there, Pollock just runs all over our boy Taylor on the other side, our producer.
No, it didn't. I said the truth. Taylor's job is very simple. Not only does he have a job to produce the podcast, when he puts out the podcast, just like every other Twitter thing and every other thing in the world nowadays, is we want headlines, right? Like, we want to get viewers. That's the point, right? That's why we do what we do. So you take a headline and you make it whatever you think people will click on. And Alabama fans were jacked about it. They were excited to see it. They were happy as hell.
So again, we're giving you a hard time, Pollock. It was a lot of fun. We knew what was going on.
I stand by my statement.
Of course. Listen,
I'm not changing. By the way, Kirk, you'll love this too. I get tweets during the game. Yeah, you idiot. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Wow, Mississippi State is a true litmus test of what your season's going to be like. They haven't scored in 6 months, bro. Like, seriously? Mississippi State is oh, see, I told you so. But we'll see. We'll see down the road how much it matters.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you find much out, you know, the week of Mississippi State. My fun thing last week was, you know, I work in my office, you know, throughout the day, and I have different shows on, and depending on, it's almost like background noise. And I flipped over. A lot of times I'll bounce around from SEC network, Big Ten network, ACC network, and just to kind of keep college football constantly going. And Paul Feinbaum was on, and some guy calls in and, I can't believe Herb Street said that Alabama's done. And I'm like, I didn't say that.
Guilt by association, baby.
I know, man. I'm like, I was on the other end of that argument, but somehow I got looped into thinking that. But
I'm taking you down with me, bro.
Yeah,
hey, there's not room for both of us on the door. We're going down together, buddy.
Pollock, it's like crabs in a bucket, man. Pollock's going to take everybody down if he's going to be down there at the bottom.
Hey, are we going to talk about Jim Harbaugh or what?
We're doing it right now. First off, let's go. Let's say congratulations to Mel Tucker and Michigan State, first off. Rocky Lombardi to go to the Big House. That team showed a ton of heart, especially after a week of just, where is this program? What's going on? And obviously Mel Tucker in such a weird situation, taking over in February, then COVID hits in March, and now you've got to get to learn your team and move forward and put together a season. So he was working behind the eight ball, and for this team to rebound after Rutgers and honestly just want it more when you're watching the way the game is being played. What happened to Michigan? And maybe it's, we're learning more about Minnesota as well, considering what happened to Maryland, and it's early in the season, but you cannot lose to Michigan State. We understand the problems against Ohio State, but you cannot lose to Michigan State right now at this point. And then the record that everybody's been talking about is 1-6 against Michigan State and Ohio State at home since he's taken over. Guys, that cannot happen. So, Herbie, let's start with you. What happened to Michigan State? I mean, Michigan in this Michigan State game.
Oh, man. I keep wanting Michigan to get back to being Michigan so badly for the Big Ten. And I think it's great for college football. You know, they're one of those brands like a USC or a Texas or a Florida State. You know, it's
actually
great.
Texas is a great comparison because they look like Texas right now.
Yeah. It's great when they're good. To me, I haven't broken down the entire game. I watched a lot of it. They didn't look like they were, you know, the Minnesota game I called, I walked out of there thinking, oh my gosh, four new offensive linemen, these four backs they got, controlling the line of scrimmage, taking it off of Milton, letting him kind of be efficient, not having to win the game. They don't have a dynamic receiver, but that's okay if they can control the line of scrimmage. And then the Michigan State game, you know, I think they got exposed with not having that offensive line that looked so good against Minnesota. They were not controlling things up front. And then when they couldn't, now they got to rely on Milton and these receivers, you know, that are just kind of solid at this point, but nobody that you can hang your hat on.
And I thought defensively, David, you know, Don Brown, we all know what he's going to do. And Lombardi throws for 323 with three touchdowns. And the young freshman, Ricky White, I think he almost had 200 yards receiving by himself. So you got to have corners to run that system that he runs. And that game, I think their corners really, really got exposed.
Yeah, and that wasn't even the heart of it. Like, White had almost 200. He had 8 for 196, I think. But it wasn't even that. It was, if you watch the game, the penalties that Michigan got repeatedly over and over and over and over in man coverage, it was insane. I mean, they had so many PIs.
Yep.
But they kept putting their guys on an island. I'm not going to call out anybody individually, but there was definitely a green light against Michigan on one side of the field for Michigan State. They just kept throwing and throwing and throwing and throwing and kept getting PIs and kept making big plays. Kudos, by the way, not only Mel Tucker, Jay Johnson, his offensive coordinator, was ridiculous. I mean, really, really good job, because Michigan State's numbers don't blow you away at all. I mean, it was their rushing game was okay, but the passing, they rushed it enough, and the play action and moving the pocket and not let Lombardi just sit back there, because Michigan has a good pass rush. I mean, they have a really good pass rush. Tom did a great story on Quiddy Pay, and then you got Aiden Hutchinson, who's really good. Kirk, they didn't sack him once. Not once.
Yeah. Yep.
They sack him. So it was a great offensive game plan. It was a great job of, you're going to play, man, I'm going to take shots over and over and over. And then the other side of the football, they couldn't run the football consistently, Michigan. And their offense couldn't go deep. Their offense was dink and dunk. They didn't make big plays down the field. And, you know, that was really the difference in the game. And, you know, Michigan got a late score when they were down 10 with, like, you know, 40 seconds left or 30 seconds left to make it look even closer. But this wasn't like Texas, the game, by the way. There was no turnovers on either side. Like, if this was a just straight up, we lined up, we're better than you, we outcoached you, and Michigan State game plan was better, and they executed it better, and they beat Michigan pretty soundly.
I think where Michigan goes, you know, again, we keep talking about this year being different, you know, shorter season, the guys that have decided that they want to play are, you know, hopefully invested, but also all of a sudden your season goes a little bit sideways, you face a little adversity, and your goals that you thought were attainable, all of a sudden, they still are, by the way, for Michigan, but all of a sudden you wonder, where's the psyche of that team after what they experienced losing to their rival, all the negativity. I mean, the only thing people are talking about over this past weekend, you know, you're hearing a lot of, wow, Justin Fields is legit. Ohio State looks legit. And you're hearing a lot of, what is going on with Jim Harbaugh? Look at his record against Michigan State and Ohio State at home. And I mean, you imagine being a player. And so they're going to have to block out, again, more negativity, which has been just kind of been surrounding this program for the last few years. And now they got to get ready to go to Bloomington and play a team that's, you know, kind of heading in an opposite direction as far as confidence. And Tom Allen in Indiana, they always seem to play Harbaugh close. You know, they always seem to be in the game. They just have never been able to close the deal. So this is not a week to be like, oh, we get Illinois, everything's fine, we can get everything going in the right direction. They better get over this in a hurry, because the last thing these boys want to be is 1-2, you know, getting into the start of their season.
Yeah, November could be a really long month. And Milton throwing the ball 51 times when they have such a talented backfield, you start to say, well, what are we doing here? What's the long-term goal here if we want to continue to win games?
And, well, they wouldn't have done it if they could run the football, but they couldn't. I mean, they had a choice.
I mean, he had 12 carries as well. Yeah, but there's certain things where you're just like, after what we saw and the size that this young man has, and it felt like he comes on the field, he's the most dynamic player. I'm just stunned that they do not have an identity to say, we are going to run some more, because we've got four guys that we could do it with.
They did against Minnesota, and we just kind of thought, okay, this is finally the offense that we kind of wanted to see. And maybe you're right. Maybe Minnesota's not very good. It's two games in. What I would be concerned about if I were a Michigan fan is, who on the perimeter is a game changer? Ohio State has like 9 of them. Like, who on the Michigan roster can catch a hitch and make a guy miss and get in space
and be dynamic? Who can be a Devontae Smith? Like, if Michigan wants to say and feel that they're an elite team, you got to make plays in the passing game. And it's not always a 60-yard bomb through the air. It's getting a guy in space and letting him do his thing. And I don't know. I haven't seen enough of these receivers. I don't want to judge them and say none of them are any good. It's just you don't have your traditional, you know, Michigan receiver, two or three five stars, who's going to be the guy kind of feel to them. Maybe somebody will emerge, but that would be the area. The offensive line, being able to control things up front, and who can make a play on the perimeter to help Joe Milton out would be the two areas that I want to see them potentially grow or not grow. And if they don't grow in that area, then it's going to be a tough year.
They got Wisconsin after Indiana. Who knows what that team looks like on November 14th, then Rutgers, and then Penn State. So November could be really long for Harbaugh. And you guys don't need to say anything if you don't want to on this. I'm not breaking any news, but I would be surprised if Jim Harbaugh is the head coach of Michigan next year. Down the road, I don't know if this can work. And
Taylor,
I don't know if he wants to be there.
There's your headline, Taylor.
I'm not saying anything that's earth-shattering.
Context, baby. Just,
I'm not saying anything earth-shattering.
He just said Jim Harbaugh will not be the coach next year.
I don't.
That was Kevin that said that, right? That was Kevin.
No, that was Kirk.
No. Get ready, Herbie. Hey, yeah. Listen, and get ready. You know, buckle the chin strap because it's Florida Georgia week, and Florida. You know, the halftime brawl after the bad hit by, you know, on Kyle Trask, and it's justified
was,
that some was, offensive line what, ticked off.
What was that, though?
Yeah.
What was going along with that? With big-time wrestling, Dan Mullen coming out off the top rope, like what?
The heel, right?
What in the world was that?
I don't know.
It wasn't the smartest move by Dan Mullen, I don't think.
No, I mean, he's defending, but at the same time, he's not making sure he's putting out the fire. He's throwing gasoline on it.
He started
while the players are talking.
He started the fight with coming out with that energy that he came out with. And I get being upset, but damn, I don't know about that. I mean,
those are the moments when your coach has to be really calm and make everybody else calm, because if you come out there with that kind of stuff, you know good and well, like the fire gets lit even more. And you're like, let's go.
And man, I love Dan Mullen's personality. When we have him on game day, you know, David, myself, Reese, all of us are just like, he'll come on, you know, from the field or whatever. We're like, he'll be done. And we're like, how good is he? I mean, he's got a great personality. He's got a competitive spirit about him. He did the same thing with Derek Mason and Vandy. Was it last year, or the year before, where there was a little bit of a, you know, yelling back and forth kind of thing. So he gets into that competitive mode. And I don't know, the game was really close at that point. Wasn't it like a 1-point game? I mean, it was close and it wasn't pretty. And maybe he was trying to spark his team. Maybe he was trying to get them fired up, but that was uncalled for. You're a leader of men. You cannot be the guy we're trying to control. The players don't need to be controlling the coach. That's not what we're looking for.
It worked. It worked.
I know.
It definitely sparked a rivalry. But by the way, Kevin Negandhi has officially been overtaken for the quote of the week now. Now it's Kirk Herbstreit. Dan Mullen started a fight.
We've got plenty more time. You will shoot yourself in the foot in a matter of moments. Just trust me. It'll happen.
We are
turning to, and by the way, we got to acknowledge Mullen afterwards dressing up as Darth Vader in the press conference. I understand. He's having fun on Halloween, but it was just the whole sequence. This whole season has been a very bizarre roller coaster ride with Dan. And just to add to that afterwards, with the Darth Vader thing at the podium, it's just like, wow, this is really what's going on, to add to Herbie's questions. But now we're getting to the heart of this one question with this game. What is going on with Georgia's offense right now, Pollock? You cannot feel good coming off that Kentucky game where Bennett's 9 of 13, 2 picks. And you're just like, where are we? Where is this offense? Do we know? Do we understand as they get ready for a huge game at Jacksonville? So what are you seeing right now in this offense, Pollock?
Well, first thing, I find it very interesting. You finally come to me first because it's Georgia. But anyway,
of course.
You know, we can't talk. I can't come first. You can come first to me about other subjects too, if you ever want to. But it's if you're going to be And listen, I love the University of Georgia.
No, you don't.
Yeah. I might pick against them, but I love them. If you're the University of Georgia and that's your offense that you're going to run, listen, first of all, I understand. Like, Kentucky's not a threat. Kentucky's not going to score. You know that. Like, it's very clear Kentucky's struggling to complete forward passes. They're not a good offensive team. But if I'm looking for development, Kirk, and I'm trying to improve my team, I got to trust my quarterback. Because next week, 14 ain't going to cut it against Florida. You know, and I've seen Stetson Bennett do some good things against Alabama. I've seen Stetson Bennett do some good things against Tennessee. Florida's defense ain't a world-beating defense by any stretch of the imagination. But I got to be able to trust my quarterback. If I'm going to run the ball 75,000 times and I'm just going to throw screens and I'm going to dink and dunk, then why not let DeJuan Mathis do that, who's 6'5", 200 pounds, and a freak of an athlete that, by the way, he'll open up the running game. He'll open up the boot game. He can throw screens. You know, I mean, so it's interesting that they're not finding their pulse. And you know what? Just one more thing to everybody out there. Georgia's been a quarterback away for 4 years. You know, a great quarterback, an awesome first-round pick type quarterback away. A Justin Fields, quote unquote, away from winning a national title. A Justin Fields away. You know, something like that would be the difference in Georgia winning a championship. And if you're following what I'm saying there, you should be following what I'm saying, because they had Justin Fields on their roster, for God's sakes. So it's just Georgia struggling offensively, and we've done this song and dance for several years, and it seems like they're still in the same spot.
What's the latest on George Pickens?
Kirby hasn't said anything about it, and I don't think he's gonna say anything about it. But I think there's a good chance Pickens will play. But if you watch the game, that's the least of your worries. And then after the game, because LeCount gets in a car accident after the game and he's out now for an extended period of time. Jordan Davis is probably going to be out at nose tackle. He's one of the best nose tackles, defensive linemen, you know, space eaters in the country. Julian Rochester might be out. Quay Walker might be out. You're talking about losing four or five pieces from the defense that makes that defense truly special, that is also banged up and hurt. So this is not the time you wanted to play Florida.
Yeah. And I think I go back to the quarterback situation just real quick, because I really loved what I saw from Stetson Bennett early in the year, you know, when he came in the Arkansas game, and we just kind of watched him grow and play with some confidence, play with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And the Auburn game, he made some great plays, and it looked like, boy, this guy's going in a good direction. This offense kind of growing around him. They got a running game, and now you got some other weapons besides Pickens, and this quarterback, he's not this huge, big, athletic, five-star guy, but they're finding ways to win with him. And it really, for almost three quarters against Bama, go back and watch that film, made some great throws, especially on third down into some tight windows and playing with confidence. And it's from the end of that third quarter into the fourth quarter where they started to panic a bit and started to press, fell right into what Alabama wanted. Turned the ball over. I think he ended up with, three interceptions. Then again, against Kentucky, they didn't throw a ton. Like you said, they kind of knew what they could do and win. But nonetheless, you'd still like to see that rhythm. A couple more picks. So he's thrown five picks in, the last five quarters and five or six quarters. And this is a tough rivalry game without being at 100% for the mind space of Stetson Bennett. And I'm in his corner, man. I'd like to see him get it to put it together, but let's not pretend that this Florida defense is the old school Florida defense. He'll have chances to make plays. This offense will have chances to make plays. Now, with that being said, David, this rivalry brings out the best typically emotionally in defenses, right? Well, I wanted to ask you, playing in this game, you know, as many times you did, you know, you played in a lot of big games for fans. What's different or unique about Florida, Georgia? Like Florida, Florida State, a lot of these guys played Pee Wee football together, high school football together. They've known each other forever. One of them went to Florida. The other one went to Florida State. What's it like with Florida and Georgia, like inside the locker room, that's unique or different?
If you grew up a Georgia fan, and you grew up from the 80s or the 90s, and you got to experience Steve Spurrier, it just took it to a whole nother level, because everything about you absolutely just hates Florida. It's the biggest rival for Georgia, by the way. Don't give me Georgia Tech. Don't give me Auburn. You know, listen, Alabama's turned into a pretty good rival over the last several years, but this one was always – Coach Rick was my coach. I can just tell you this. The sphincters were really tight that week, okay? I mean, it was a different level of – it was a different level of competition. And listen, you go to a neutral crowd, and I think everybody's seen it in the past. It's just – it's nuts because it's half, you know, red and black, half, you know, blue and orange.
And when you say half, it's down to the aisle, you know, just like
literally right down the middle.
Like right down
the strange. And it's strange because, you know, defense, you're on the field. There's noise on both defenses are on the field. And that's not normal. You know, like everything about it is, it's just unique and different. But when you talk about from a rivalry standpoint, you know, this one always means the most to Georgia. You can tell Kirby, by the way, was involved in those teams. So if you don't think it matters to him to, in this rivalry, you're wrong. This is the biggest week of the season, I think, for Georgia every year, and for the fans, because I think the fans hate each other just as much as the players do.
Yeah, hey, Kevin, real quick. It's the two games, just being a Big Ten guy, that I've loved to go and see in person. The Red River rivalry with OU in Texas, with, again, the stadium is 50-50. I think that's back of the end zone from that aisle all the way around to the back of the end zone on that side, the other end zone. Is like burnt orange, and then you have crimson, it goes around. Florida, Georgia, isn't it from the 50 all the way around to the other side of the 50?
And correct. And
so it's a different way of splitting the stadium, but it's the only game you'll ever go to where the stadium is literally split in half. And I always wonder what it felt like to be a player, because if you're one in the field, you obviously, the fans got your back, and the other end, you know, it's crickets, you know.
It's cool. World's largest cocktail party, and excuse the pun here, but Jacksonville's buzzing throughout that whole week, and it's great on Saturday morning. Saturday night is a lot of mayhem. I've said this before in the podcast. I'm married to a Gator. Georgia Florida week is the biggest thing, and it's circled every single year, and it's around Halloween or the final weekend of October. My mother-in-law, obviously Gator, because, you know, her daughter and her son went there. My father-in-law is a Georgia fan, so it is a huge issue in our house. So we just stay quiet.
That's easy to find where you fall in that, because happy wife, happy life, bro.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, my father-in-law lives in Georgia, so I've got to save distance. He's not bailing me out.
You don't live with him, bro. You're not worried about that.
Exactly. So it's great. And it's so funny that we're talking Florida, Georgia, but this describes 2020, right? Florida, Georgia, and we're at the end of October, early November. And hello, Pac-12. Welcome to the college football season as they kick off their schedule. And, you know, Arizona State, USC will be the noon kick on Saturday. That's circled. Stanford, Oregon is the nightcap for us on ABC. You got Washington State, Oregon State, Pac-12 after dark, which is great. We missed you in Washington, Cal. Herbie, what's the one storyline you want to watch or you think you're going to be following in this conference as they open up play?
I think Oregon, to me, had so many opt-outs. You know, this is a team, if everything was normal, they played Ohio State early in the year in a non-conference game out in Eugene. And if they had, you know, Holland and all these players that they had, Sewell, the left tackle, and it was just been a normal year, Mario Cristobal felt he had a team that had an ability to maybe go toe to toe with Ohio State. Now that's how Oregon felt. Who knows how that would have played out? But they've lost so many players, and so I know that they've recruited incredibly well. He's confident that this team can still be a very competitive team. So Saturday night, I can't wait to see how they look, to see how, you know, they've got as good a backfield as there is in the Pac-12. They've got great receivers, but you got a new quarterback and basically a brand new offensive line. So, but I want to see Oregon. You know, Jimmy Lake takes over at Washington, a defensive-minded coach, and see what, and he prides himself. I think he even poked on social media, hey, we still play defense out here in the Pac-12, so we'll see how Washington looks. David Shaw
and Stanford coming off a 4-8 year with just a ton of injuries. They're obviously too good for that. So we'll see that. And the other thing, David, to me is just a quarterback play. You know, I think you've got a couple really talented quarterbacks that typically Slovis has a chance to be outstanding, and Jaden Daniels at Arizona State is really
good. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, let's see how the quarterbacks do out west.
That's exactly where I was going. I'm just excited to watch Jaden Daniels in Arizona State and Herm Edwards, and you got Todd Helton, obviously. It's a big deal. It's going to be fun to watch Arizona State USC week one. To me, that's going to tell a lot about who's the best team in this conference, because I don't think there's a leader, but as soon as that team wins this week, I think you have a leader in the clubhouse to start the season, because it's a tough game. But I'm drawn towards Arizona State and Jaden Daniels, because I think he's special, and I just love his composure and his poise and his ability to not to mention his ability through the roof. And, you know, can they put together a decent offensive line in front of him? They've always been able to find skill and playmakers, and Marvin Lewis, you know, in a bigger role there now with the defense. And it's just going to be Arizona State to me is a team I'm going to keep an eye on quick.
I'm with you. I love Herm. I love what his staff has done. And Jaden Daniels is the most dynamic player. Don't sleep on Keaton Slovis. I know you guys are not, but I'm curious to see how USC comes out to a game like this to start the season. And guys, another storyline here too. A noon kick on the East Coast, 9 a.m. kick on the West Coast for USC Arizona State.
It took COVID and a global pandemic, but We've got early football in the Pac-12 now, so that's
9 a.m.
It's going to be very. Remember when Stanford did it with Northwestern, Kirk, and it didn't end very well for Stanford. But
people don't understand when you play at 9 a.m. local, you're getting up for a breakfast and team walk. I mean, you got to get to the stadium by 7.
Yep.
So you're probably up moving around
5:30,
5-ish. Yeah. 5:30 local time. I mean and then you're going to go into an empty stadium. I mean, you're going to really see which team can handle a lot of challenging aspects of getting ready to be prepped. Cause again, football is about emotion and flying around and being excited, especially on defense. And you got to get up at 5 in the morning and go over, and you haven't played in a year. And now here we go. And by the way, just reading about how they've been training, like some of these schools, because their hotspots have not been able to train at their facilities all this time. And they've been over at like in the park, you know, working out. I mean, it's just so bizarre how they've had to train out west, some of the schools.
You know, it's interesting you say that. And I think if anything, USC and the Pac-12, they're kind of used to empty stadiums, though. Like, Kirk, am I lying, Kirk? Like, when you go out west, it is a totally different vibe. You know, Oregon's different, Washington's different, but USC, I'll never forget, even when they were really good going out there, I was like, man, this is where are the people at? Like,
dude, when Pete Carroll had those boys rolling, that was the ticket over the Lakers, over the Dodgers. That was 100,000 strong every game with now
that was 100 years ago too.
Yeah, I know. After he left, Lane Kiffin and Clay Helton and you know, these other coaches, they've not been able to make it at LA. You got to make USC cool, you know, to get people to now Chip Kelly can tell you about empty stadiums at UCLA. Mm-hmm. Sure. But USC, if they could ever make it cool, that's the only way people are going to come out, you know. Otherwise, you're going to have a 100,000 seat stadium that's beautiful and newly renovated, and you're going to have, you know, 60,000-70,000 there, which doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't.
You know what else? Though I think this year more than ever, the Pac-12, the kids, everybody is more grateful than ever to have football. Like, you had it taken away, and I think a lot of people are like, "Dang, this sucks. My life is not the same without football." And so maybe I think you get the best, hopefully, of everybody because they're so appreciative, no matter if it's 9 a.m. their time or, you know, 5 a.m. or 4 a.m., whatever it is, whatever time they got to get up, they're like, dude, I get to play football this Saturday. That's a pretty good Saturday.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up here. And Herbie, you know what? We'll give you the last word, because on Wednesdays,
you know, Pollock doesn't like to talk about Cincinnati, and you know, Cincinnati. They deserve love here. He picks against them constantly. He just
I picked him to beat SMU.
Can't stand their offense.
SMU. What are you talking about?
So go ahead, Herbie. Let's talk about undefeated Bearcats and what we're seeing from their defense and Desmond Ridder.
Yeah, Cincinnati Bearcats every week on game day. Pollock, he's like, I've been picking against them. Might as well just keep it going. Pick against them again. That's all right.
I picked him against SN. What are y'all talking about? I picked him every week except for this past week.
Come on.
I picked him every week.
Well, I don't know about that.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Pollock.
The fact that we went against each other head-to-head with the SMU game, and I told you Cincinnati was going to win, and now you pulled it. I love it. Okay. I got you, Kev. I got you. Okay.
Don't interrupt Herb Street. Herb Street's here to talk about Cincinnati. Let him do that.
Hey, by the way, Kurt, let me talk real quick. Hold on a second. Let me shut this kid up real quick. All right. First of all,
Taylor, you've lost control.
Kudos to Desmond Ridder, because that kid's a different kid, and he's gotten better throughout the season. He's always been a really good athlete, Kirk, and he's always been able to run. But he made a bunch of throws in the Memphis game where timing throws, seeing the blitz. You know, I don't think his playmakers are the best in college football, but just, I mean, secondary reads, just he's just grown a ton, and kudos to him. So you say what you want to say, but I want to give him credit because I've been down on him, and he deserves props for the way he played this past week specifically, because he was on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, he has. And you know, I think he's you're right about the playmakers around him. They're good. I think, you know, he's had some, even when he was younger, he had maybe some better skill around him. But this team is just confident. I just feel like they believe in Luke Fickell. They believe that their defense is going to hang around. You know, I know that's rare anymore to think that a defense can keep you in a game, and you don't have to just blow people out with the offense. But he's getting better and better. And, you know, they're right now a team that thinks that they're going to win. They don't go to take the field hoping that they're going to win. They know they're going to win. And so when you have that on both sides of the ball, you become a pretty dangerous team. But Luke Fickell, you know, it's almost like the modern era of the Jim Tressel. Tressel ball is the way they really play the game, and they're doing it well.
Yeah, the one thing that's working against the Bearcats is scheduling in front of them and who they're going to face. But they deserve to be in the conversation when it comes to a top six team, 5-0, undefeated. And I was really impressed that
they deserve to be in the conversation and be a top six team, not top four, but top six team.
You heard that, Bearcats. He's so bitter. Do you notice this? Do you notice, Herbie? I got to deal with this on Wednesday. He's so bitter and angry.
Kirk, the picks are really close with me and Kev. He's only down 36. Almost 5 weeks of the season. So,
hey, fellas, have fun at Herb Street. You know, I hope you have a good week. Where are you guys going this week? Are you guys going to the West Coast? Or are you guys going to Florida,
South
Georgia?
Going to South Bend?
Okay. All right.
Yeah, game day is Clemson and Notre Dame, and then I'm heading out to Eugene for Saturday night. Gotcha. Eugene, Stanford, and Oregon.
That's a day, homie. You got a day.
That is.
Hey, I'm so excited when they announced game day, bro. I was literally like, "Thank you, Lord," because I was like, "Let's stay on the nice little track up to Indiana, nice little track back." You got a haul.
How about this Nashville to South Bend on Friday, and then game day in the morning, and then South Bend to Eugene. Not many people made that trip, by the way. South Bend to Eugene on Saturday, call the game that night, and then 6 a.m. from
Sunday
Eugene
morning.
Sunday morning back to Nashville. So we're going to be killing them.
Well, have some fun. Safe travels. And we'll talk to you next week, and you know, Pollock, I'll talk to you on Wednesday, and we'll review some of the picks you've made.
Yeah, we'll see what that scoreboard says, Kev. I'm in.
Be good, fellas.
See you guys.